Okay, welcome. This is episode 100, woohoo, of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. And in this episode, I will call this Micro by Cases. Basically, for the 100th episode, my goal was to make a podcast that will probably be the one of the highest, at least top five highest yield of the ones I have on my website. I know that the risk factors one is pretty high yield for a lot of people. Many of the shelf ones are pretty high yield. So I will try to make this one pretty high yield. And really, this podcast is targeted pretty much to every USMLE exam. Step 1, 2CK, Step 3. And even like some of these specialty board exams, especially like medicine. Basically, my goal in this podcast is to essentially go through many of the high yield scenarios. And I'm not going to be focusing on like, oh, gram negative, blah, blah, blah. No, I will try to basically give you the clinical scenarios of many bugs and then tell you the bug. Okay, so this is something I would beg you. Actually, I'm begging. Listen to it before you take any of these major USMLE exams. It will help you tremendously. You're going to get probably, I'll be willing to wager, like 10, 20, maybe even 30 questions correct from just listening to this one podcast. So let's begin, and I'll try to group things. So what if you get a question about a patient that has like bloody diarrhea, right? Or they can call it amoebic dysentery, and they have a liver abscess on imaging. What bug are you thinking about? That's Entamoeba histolytica, right? Okay. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has like foul-smelling diarrhea and they recently hiked or drank like some kind of contaminated water? Alternatively, this may be a patient with like a B-cell immunodeficiency disease like IgA deficiency or like Bruton's A-gamma globulinemia or CVID, right? So chronic variable immunodeficiency. What bug are you thinking about? That would be Giardia lamblia, right? So you do an ovum parasite of the stool. Now, what if you get a question about diarrhea in an AIDS patient and they tell you that, oh, you look at the stool, you find acid fast oocysts. What is that? That is Cryptosporidium parvum. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has like a vaginal infection and he has like a green discharge and the pH is more than 4.5? That's Trichomonas vaginalis. Give metronidazole, right? Now, what if a person, right, recently came back from a developing country and they are having like thrombocytopenia, they have an anemia, and they're having fevers that seem to come and go every 48 hours. What are the Plasmodium species you're thinking about here? Those are Plasmodium vivax and ovale, right? What if you see similar symptoms, but the fevers come and go every 72 hours? That's Plasmodium malariae, okay? And which of the Plasmodium species, I guess, have dormant stages in the liver? That's vivax and ovale, right? Okay. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that plays with cat feces or has a cat at home, and then they have like ring-enhancing brain lesions? That's Toxoplasma gondii, right? Okay. Now, what if a patient has like an indirect hyperbilirubinemia, and they have like a hemoglobin of 8, and they recently got like malaria treatment? What disease are you thinking about? I hope you're thinking about like a G6PD deficiency, right? So a deficiency of glucose-6-phosphate dehydrogenase. Remember, that's the rate-limiting enzyme of the oxidative phase of the pentose phosphate pathway. That's also known as the hexosa monophosphate shunt. Okay. What if a person gets like a diarrhea after they consumed pork? That's tinea solium. Okay. What if a patient has like cysts in the brain? It sort of follows from the previous question, right? That's tinea solium, right? Remember your neurocysticercosis. Again, consuming eggs is also an association you want to keep at the back of your mind with tinea solium. Okay. What if they give you a question about a child that itches a lot, like he itches his buttocks a lot? What bug are you thinking about? That's Enterobius vermicularis, right? Remember the scotch tape test for that. Okay, now what if you get a question about a patient, you know, that has like a microcytic anemia and they tell you that they do some kind of colonoscopy or whatever, and then they see some like worms attaching to the intestine, right? I hope you're thinking about like your Ancylostoma duodenale, right? Or like Nicator americanus. Okay. What if you get a question about a patient that recently came back from Egypt went on a swimming expedition, and then they have hematuria. I hope you're thinking about schistosoma hematobium, right? Schistosoma hematobium. Okay. Now, what if you get a question and you see an image and the eggs have like a terminal spine? And let's assume this person just came back. They put like Egypt, any mention of Egypt in the question. That's also schistosoma hematobium. What if you get a question about a person that has like a liver abscess and they consume snails? I actually really want you to think about some other schistosoma species. So like schistosoma mansoni or like schistosoma japonicum. These will be probably more tested on step one than step two, CK and step three. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that, let's see, how do I test this? Yeah, let's put it this way. What if you get a question about a patient that's immunocompromised, or let's say they have AIDS, and then you're seeing like diffuse markings on a chest x-ray? What bug are you thinking about? Pneumocystis jervetii, right? So interstitial infiltrates on a chest x-ray. Remember, it's silver stain positive. And remember that if those people's AA gradient is greater than 35, or their PaO2 is less than 70, in addition to giving them trimethoprim and sulfamethoxazole, you need to add on steroids. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about like white lesions in the tongue of an individual that's on a chemotherapy? Right, that's thrush, that's candida albicans, right? Okay, now what if you get a question about meningitis in an AIDS patient? That'll be Cryptococcus neoformans. Remember the latex particle agglutination assay. And don't forget your India ink stain. Okay, now what if you get a question about a patient that's from Ohio or like from Kentucky and they have a pulmonary infection? What's the bug? Histoplasma capsulatum. Very good. Okay, now all the tinea's, right? So like tinea cruris, tinea corporis, tinea pedis. What are the big bugs that cause these problems? There is trichophyton, there is microsporum, and there is epidermal phyton. The one you want to pick on an MBME exam, if it's an answer, is trichophyton. If you don't see trichophyton, then go for microsporum. But I'll tell you the truth. Like 99.9% of the MBME questions I have seen that tested the tinea's, the correct answer was a trichophyton species. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that's from California or lives in California or recently visited California and they have like a pulmonary infection and then they show you a histology slide and you see spherules? What bug are you thinking about? That's coccidioides immitis, right? Coccidiomycosis. Remember, that's also associated with there's this skin lesion that can show up in patients with sarcoidosis. I'm forgetting right now. Come on, divine, think. Yeah, it's not coming to mind right now. I'll try and remember and say that in this podcast or in a future podcast. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about like an immunocompromised patient and they give you like they give you like a CBC and you find like their eosinophils are like 10% of the CBC. And then you get a chest x-ray and like in the right upper lobe you see like a ball, like a fungus ball. I really hope you're thinking about Aspergillus or fumigatus, right? Remember, in those cases, you need to biopsy that to make sure it's not a lung cancer. Don't forget your differential for eosinophilia, right? So like drugs, neoplasms, asthma allergies, Addison's disease, collagen vascular diseases like scleroderma, right, and parasites. And then don't forget, right, that don't forget like the order of things on your CBC, right, in order of like decreasing frequency. So your neutrophils are the most common, followed by your lymphocytes, and then your macrophages or monocytes, and then your eosinophils, and then your basophils. The easy way to remember that is with this mnemonic that you should never let monkeys eat bananas, okay? That's, you shouldn't do that to a monkey, but never let monkeys eat bananas. That's the mnemonic there. Okay, what if you get a question about a patient that has like lesions in the lung, in the bone, in the skin, and they have like, they tell you that, oh, you see a broad-based bud on histology. So a broad-based bud. So broad-based bud should get you thinking of blastomyces dermatitis. Okay. So blastomycosis. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that, you know, was recently, or let's say it's this person is a gardener, right? Or works in the fields. And then they tell you that, they have like these lesions on one extremity, right? And they have like associated lymphadenopathy. or let's say it's a rose garden, or they were pricked by a thorn. What are you thinking about? I really hope you're thinking about sporotrichosis, right? Caused by Aspergillus Schenckii. Very high yield to know that for the US MLEs. Now, what if you get a question about a diabetic, especially like a type 1 diabetic, potentially a diabetic that is in DKA, okay? And they have like an infection of the face and it looks necrotic, has like SRs and everything. What bug are you thinking about? I hope you're thinking about like mucormycosis, okay? Like your rhizopus, your mucor species. Remember on histology, right? You'll find the non-septate hyphae or aseptate hyphae, and they branch at 90 degree angles. That's very high yield to know, especially for the USMLE step one. And then if you're thinking about a bug, right, that has like septate hyphae and branches at acute angles, right, at 45 degree angles, think more about like Aspergillus fumigatus. Remember, Aspergillus, remember the A in Aspergillus for the A in acute angles, right, like a 45 degree angle. Let's see. So what next do I have for you? So what if you get a question about, let's see, how do I phrase this? Yeah, so what if you get a question about like cellulitis in a burn patient? What bug are you thinking about? Really hope you're thinking about Pseudomonas aeruginosa, right? What if they give you a picture and you see a rash that looks like a bullseye? What's the bug? That's Borrelia burgdorferi, right? Remember, it's a spirochete carried by the Ixodes tick. That's Lyme disease, right? Okay. Now, what if in a question you see a strawberry tongue? That's scarlet fever, right? Strep pyogenes. Remember, you can also find a strawberry tongue in patients that have Kawasaki's disease. Okay. Now, what if you get a strawberry cervix? Green, frothy green, foul-smelling vaginal discharge, and the vaginal pH is greater than 4.5. That's trich, right? That's Trichomonas vaginalis. Okay? What if you... And actually, I guess I'll just go ahead and say this because I've been mentioning it a lot. In general, for MBMEs, the only vaginal infection where the pH is less than 4.5 is Candida. Okay? It's Candida. Okay, now what if you get a question about a patient that recently returned from Mexico and they have like a watery diarrhea, and let's say they drank water in Mexico. What bug are you thinking about? I hope you're thinking about ETEC, right? Enterotoxigenic E. coli. Okay, now what if you get a question about a patient that has like a maculopapular rash, and let's say they just came back from spring break and they engaged in many risky sexual behaviors, and then they say, "Doc, you know what, I saw this ulcer on my penis, but it kind of went away, it didn't hurt nothing." What stage of syphilis are you thinking about now? That's secondary syphilis, right? Okay, remember condyloma lata, that's basically what I described. Now, what's the general disease where a person is febrile, it's acute onset, they have nuchal rigidity, and they're altered? That's meningitis, right? Now, what if you get a question about meningitis in a college student and they tell you that this patient has like skin lesions, like purpura, pustules, right? That's Neisseria meningitidis, right? And if a person has meningitis, right, and they have signs of elevated intracranial pressures, right, like papilledema and all that crap, you need to do a head CT first, okay? You need to do a head CT first to rule out like a mass lesion, right? Because you don't want to do a lumbar puncture and then the herniate and die, right? That will not be ideal. So you do a head CT first. And then after you do the head CT, you then do a lumbar puncture. But if they don't have like signs of elevated ICPs, like they don't have papilledema and stuff like that, you can go ahead and do a lumbar puncture. And remember, right, you'll find the gram-negative diplococci that have capsules, right? If it's Neisseria meningitidis you're dealing with. And remember that Neisseria meningitidis, what kind of drugs do you give, right? You give like ceftriaxone, right? You give ceftriaxone. Although, if a person comes in with meningitis and you empirically want to treat them, you want to give them ceftriaxone and vancomycin, okay? Ceftriaxone and vancomycin. And remember that if you took care of a patient, let's say you intubated a patient, that's the classic MBME question, intubate a patient that has meningitis, right? You need to take something for prophylaxis, like rifampin. Okay, rifampin is the preferred agent. Other things you can use things like ciprofloxacin or ceftriaxone, but rifampin is the first line agent. But obviously, if you're pregnant, you cannot use rifampin or ciprofloxacin because ciprofloxacin will explode your tendons or the baby's tendons. So you go ahead and take ceftriaxone under those circumstances. Okay, and then the other high yield prophylaxis thingy, if you're close contact, is like what is this thing called? Whooping cough, right? So Bordetella pertussis, you treat Bordetella pertussis with erythromycin. If you're a close contact, you're also prophylaxed with erythromycin as well, or any macrolide of your choosing. Okay, now what if you get a question about a meningitis in a person that's like in their 60s or older? What bug are you thinking about? That's strep pneumo, right? What if you get a question about meningitis in an unimmunized like infant, right? That'll be strep pneumo as well. Strep pneumo is the most common cause of strep pneumo, right, is the most common cause of meningitis. But if the patient is unimmunized, you should also think about like Neisseria meningitidis and like H flu. Now, what if you get a question about meningitis in your neonate? What bug do you really want to think of first? Right, you want to think about Grubby strep, right? Grubby strep. Okay, so I think that's all I'm gonna say here. But you know, let's keep going. So, what if you get a question about a neonate that has like encephalitis, and let's say the mom works in a pet store or like an animal conservancy or whatever that handles cats? What bug are you thinking about? That's Toxoplasma gondii, right? Remember the cat association. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has bloody diarrhea and they recently consumed chicken? Especially in the US, you probably want to think about Campylobacter jejuni. Remember the ascending paralysis and Guillain-Barré syndrome, right? And also, don't forget from my earlier podcast today, the association with reactive arthritis, right? So like Ryder syndrome, because it's a cause of bloody diarrhea. Now, what if they ask you, this is more for step one folks, right? So like a bug that has a hyaluronic acid capsule and it has like M protein, right? That's group A strep, right? That's a strep pyogenes. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that is ataxic and they've lost like sensation, and let's assume it's like a sexually active female? What are you thinking about? So sexually active female with risky behaviors for many years. I hope you're thinking about like tibis dorsalis, right? Remember tertiary syphilis, you can basically screw up your dorsal columns, right? So like your dorsal columns and medial lemniscus system. So you lose like fine touch, vibratory, and proprioceptive sense. Okay, now, what if you get a question about a patient that has encephalitis, like weeks after they consumed like undercooked pork? What bug are you thinking about? I've mentioned this already before. Tinea solium, right? That's neurocysticercosis. Now, what if they tell you that, oh, this is a HIV patient, and you get a CAT scan and you're finding ring-enhancing lesions in the brain of a HIV patient? What are you thinking about? You're thinking about T. gondii, right? Toxoplasma gondii. Remember, you prophylax against toxoplasmosis with trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole. But you treat, and remember the magic CD4 count is less than 100. But you treat toxoplasmosis with pyrimethamine and sulfadiazine. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has like bloody diarrhea? And they have like hepatomegaly on physical exam, and they say, oh, you perform imaging and you find a liver abscess. What are you thinking about? That's Entamoeba histolytica, right? Okay, now let's assume you have an AIDS patient and you check their stool and you find like, and this AIDS patient has diarrhea and you see like a positive acid fast oocysts. What's the bug? That's Cryptosporidium parvum, right? Now, what if you get a question about like a sexually active guy, you know, that has arthritis and he has like skin petechiae? That's gonococcus, right? That's Neisseria gonorrhea. Don't forget Neisseria meningitidis and the adrenal hemorrhage, right? With like Waterhouse-Friderichsen syndrome. So if they give you a patient that has like meningitis and then all of a sudden they have like circulatory collapse and they have like hyperkalemia and hyponatremia and a metabolic acidosis, right? Those are all signs of adrenal insufficiency. You really want to think about Waterhouse-Friderichsen syndrome from Neisseria meningitidis. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has like large testicles and a large parotid gland? Right, that's mumps, right? Remember, that can also cause a pancreatitis. Now, what if you get a question about a sickle cell patient or any patient that has a hemoglobinopathy, and acutely their hemoglobin drops super low, like well below their baseline? What virus are you thinking about? That's PAVO-B19, right? Remember, it's a single-stranded DNA virus. I remember it can cause like an anemic crisis in patients that have hemoglobinopathies. Okay, now, what if you get a question about like permanent flaccid paralysis in an unvaccinated child, right? That's poliomyelitis. Remember, polio loves to, it's an enterovirus, it loves to screw up your anterior horn, right? Like the ventral horn of your spinal cord. Okay, what if you get a question about like nuchal rigidity in a two-week-old child, right? That's group B strep, right? Strep A galactiae. Group B strep is the most common cause of essentially any major neonatal infection in the first 4 weeks of life. Okay, what is the most common bacterial cause of STDs in the U.S.? Right, that's Chlamydia trachomatis, right? Like the D through K serovars. Now, what's the most common cause of UTIs in the U.S.? That's E. coli, right? What's the second most common cause? That's Staph epidermidis, right? Sorry, Staph saprophyticus, whoops. Now, what if you get a question about elevated liver enzymes in a pregnant woman that subsequently dies? That's Hep E, right? The influenza virus, right? This is just a concept you want to know for the USMLEs. But remember that it has like a segmented genome, right? That's why it can cause like these epidemics and pandemics. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has like sore throat and they have like viral conjunctivitis alongside? Think about adenovirus. Remember, adenovirus can also cause like a gastroenteritis, and it can also cause a hemorrhagic cystitis. I've seen that presentation on the USMLEs. Now, what if you get a question about like a black eschar in a diabetic? That's Pseudomonas, right? Remember, that's like eczema gangrenosa. Now, what if you get a question about like a viral myocarditis? What's the virus you're thinking about? That'll be Coxsackie B, right? Not Coxsackie A, Coxsackie B. Remember, Coxsackie A is the thing that causes hand, foot, mouth disease, the rash on the palms and soles. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has like flu-like symptoms and they have like ocular findings on a physical exam after visiting Hawaii? You're thinking about leptospirosis, right? So like Leptospira interrogans. Okay, very good. So let's see, how do I present this to you? Okay, what if you get a question about a kid that, like, you know, goes to daycare and has like this rash and it looks like the kid was slapped? That's PAVO-B19, right? Now, what if you get the question about like this, I guess, triad or tetrad of like a kid with like cough, has like runny nose, so like coryza, and has like pink eyes, so like conjunctivitis, and they have like coplic spots on the buccal mucosa? What's the virus you're thinking about, right? That's measles, right? Like your rubella. Now, what if you remember, measles can also cause like this rash that starts on the face and sort of spreads down, right? Now, what if you get a question about a kid that has like gastroenteritis and it's an immigrant, like has like a few days of gastroenteritis and then they become like permanently like quadriplegic? What bug are you thinking about? That's poliovirus, right? Remember, again, that's an enterovirus. Knowing that poliovirus is an enterovirus is actually kind of high yield to know for the USMLE step one. Okay, now, what if you get a question about a patient that has cervical cancer and the patient is sexually active and is like a young patient? That's HPV, right? Like the 16 and 18 and the ones in the 30s. Don't forget, right, that the most common cause of death, very high yield to know this, most common cause of death in a patient with cervical cancer is renal failure because the mass involves the ureter. So basically, if you see a gynecologic malignancy and the creatinine is elevated and they have like significant uremia, don't bother reading the rest of the question. It's cervical cancer, end of story. Now, what if you get this triad, right? Like parotiditis, so inflammation of the parotids, or chitis, inflammation of the testicles, and like a guy that's having trouble like getting his wife pregnant, right? That's mumps, right? Now, what if you get a question about like cataracts or like blindness in a newborn? What's the bug you're thinking about? That's rubella, right? Remember, it can also cause like cardiac problems like the PDA, right? So like patent ductosaturosis, like the machine-like murmur. I remember PDA presents with a wide pulse pressure. That's very high yield to know. I am super excited for when I'll get to give cardiology reviews. That will take a lot of planning, but I am obsessed with cardio. That will be a fun set of reviews. Okay, but back to this. Now, what if you get a question about like painful skin lesions in a dermatomal pattern? That's VZV, right? So like the varicella zoster virus, remember that's like herpes 3. Remember that, right? For the most part, VZV tends to sort of like stay dormant in the dorsal root ganglion, right? And you can treat it with acyclovir actually. Okay, but if it's resistant to acyclovir, you can go after foscarnet. That's like the pyrophosphate analog. Okay, now what if you get a question about like genital warts? Right, think about HPV 6 and 11, right? 6 and 11. Remember, that's what's known as a condyloma acuminata. Please do not confuse condyloma acuminata of HPV 6 and 11 with condyloma lata of secondary syphilis. Now, what if you get a question about like retinitis or like colitis in an AIDS patient? Or let's say like a patient that recently got a transplant. What's the virus you're thinking about? That's CMV, right? And usually on the MBME question, they'll tell you that, oh, on histology or on biopsy, you find like intranuclear inclusion buddies, okay? Remember, you treat CMV with a ganciclovir. Okay, now, what if you get a question about painful vesicles on the genitals with an erythematous base? Right, you're thinking more about HSV2, right? HSV1 tends to cause more oral ulcers, but that is not a true, that's not a hard and fast rule. You can get genital ulcers with HSV1, okay? Now, what if you get a question with about like a pregnant woman that has like really high AST, really high ALT, and this disease has high mortality? That's Hep E, right? It's like 25% mortality. It's actually pretty high. Now, what if you get a question about like watery diarrhea on a cruise ship? It's pretty easy, right? That's like norovirus, Norwalk virus. What if you get a question about a young sexually active female, right, that's just been feeling like wiped for the last few weeks, has like left upper quadrant like mass, so like splenomegaly, and then you do a blood smear and you find like atypical lymphocytes, and she has like posterior cervical lymphadenopathy. That's EBV, right? I just want to go ahead and say something, right? So don't hang your hat on posterior cervical lymphadenopathy as being indicative of EBV, okay? Your friends at the MBME are now writing questions where it's EBV, but they give you anterior cervical lymphadenopathy in the question. I know, kind of sucks, right? But just sort of keep that at the back of your mind. Okay, now, what if you get a question about, it's a pediatric question, and the kid has a really bad watery diarrhea? That's rotavirus, right? That's rotavirus. Remember that it can actually, rotavirus for folks, those folks taking step one, remember it can participate in, come on Divine, think, I know this shows up a lot on step one, it's called like a genetic reassortment. Okay, and that thing just came to my mind. Remember the thing I was talking about, like coccidiomycosis, that they can get on the lower extremities? That's erythema nodosum. That's also found in patients with sarcoidosis. Okay, and remember, right, there is actually a vaccine against rotavirus, but those are contraindicated in patients that have a history of intussusception or patients that have a history of Meckel's diverticulum. Those are very high yield to know for the pediatrics shelf exam. Okay, now, what if you get a question, I guess, what are the two most common causes of the common cold, right? That's corona and rhinovirus, right? The most common one is rhinovirus. Okay, now, what if you get a question about, like, pneumonia and, like, expiratory wheezing in a kid that's, like, less than 2 years old? What's the bug you're thinking about? That's RSV, right? Like respiratory syncytial virus. If a kid is at high risk of like getting like severe respiratory compromise with RSV, you can actually prophylax against RSV with a monoclonal antibody known as a palivizumab. Okay. Now, what if a patient has like myalgias, fevers, feeling like crap in like December, January? That's the influenza virus, right? I had a very good taste of the influenza virus. This was November, December of my third year of med school. That was like back in like 2016 or whatever. I did my peds rotation in November, December. That's like prime time for getting infected. I think I had the flu like twice during that rotation. But it was a fun rotation nonetheless. Okay, back to this. Now, What if you get a question about a patient, that was bitten by an animal, and then they have like a fatal encephalitis, and they tell you that they're refusing showers not long before they died, or they don't want to drink anything before they died. What bug are you thinking about? Right, that's the rabies virus, right? Remember, it's a rhabdovirus. And then what if you get a question about a neonate that has like encephalitis? They do a lumbar puncture and you see like a lot of red blood cells, right? Or you see like temporal lobe enhancement on imaging of the brain. What are you thinking about? I hope you're thinking about HSV, right? Remember, in viral meningitis, you'll have like the normal CSF pressures, normal protein, normal glucose, but the cells that will be elevated will be the lymphocytes, right? Okay, so I think that's you know what? I'm feeling pretty good today. Let's keep going. I think there's a lot more stuff that we can sort of talk about. Let's see, how do I present this? I guess I can talk about like similar sounding words, right? So if you see like erythema chronicum migrans, right? That's Lyme disease. Basically, these words all sound the same, but they're all like for like completely different things, right? So like erythema chronicum migrans is like Lyme disease. Erythema marginatum, right, is like rheumatic fever, right, from like group A strep. Erythema infectiosum, right? That's like the slapped cheek finding in patients that have like Parvo-B19, right? And then ecthyma gangrenosum, right? That's like the skin finding, the black eschar in patients that have Pseudomonas. And then there's this one weird thing that tends to show up on peds exams. Might as well talk about it. It's a pseudo group A strep. Basically, they give you a question about a kid that's like having like coryphal movements of the like arms or whatever. And then they tell you that they had like sore throat or like some kind of like weird upper respiratory infection, like a few months ago. You want to think about like an autoimmune, very high yield to know that word, autoimmune reaction to group A strep. It's called like PANDAS, so like pediatric autoimmune neuropsych disorder associated with group A strep. Okay, keep that at the back of your mind for exams. Okay, so let's see, how do I present this next one? Okay. What if you get a question about a patient that has like a painless chancre or an ulcer on their genitals, right? That's T. pallidum, right? Treponema pallidum. That's clearly syphilis. I remember, right? You'll have like the indurated or like the raised edges. They may have like some lymphadenopathy. Okay. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient that has like, they have like painless ulcers on the genitals. They actually do not have inguinal lymphadenopathy. I hope you're thinking about like Klebsiella granulomatis. Remember, that's the thing that causes a granuloma inguinale. Okay. If you do histology or pathology, you find like the intracellular Donovan bodies. And again, it's a painless ulcer, has like a beefy red base. Okay. Now, what if you get a question and they tell you that, oh, on histology, you find like epithelial cells with inclusion bodies? That's herpes simplex, right? That's like HSV2. And I'll just go ahead and say this, right? So there's some people that, I'm sure there's some people listening to this podcast saying like, Divine, all this histology you're saying, that's more for step one. Think again, right? I promise you, there are step two questions where they will describe pathology findings, believe it or not. And also shelf exams. Okay, now, what if they give you a question about a patient with like genital warts, right? That's HPV wart 6 and 11. Okay. Now, what if they tell you about a patient that has like a urethral discharge, and you do a gram stain of the discharge and you find gram-negative diplococci? Right, you're thinking about Neisseria gonorrhea. Very good. Okay. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient that has like a painless genital ulcer, and then it progresses to like massive inguinal lymphadenopathy? And I'll give you a hint. This is also known as lymphogranuloma venereum. This is actually chlamydia. This is chlamydia trachomatis, but these are the L1 through 3 serovars. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about like let's see. What's the STI that you can diagnose with like dark field microscopy? That's syphilis, right? Treponema pallidum. Remember, it's a spirochete. And what if they give you a question about a patient that has like pain, like a painful ulcer? And they have like inguinal, and they don't have, actually, you know what? They do have inguinal, like bilateral inguinal lymphadenopathy. That's Haemophilus ducreyi, right? That's chancroid, right? Remember, Haemophilus ducreyi makes you cry. Okay, what if you see like painful vesicles on the genitalia with an erythematous base? That's HSV2, right? Okay, now what if you get a question about a patient that has like a septic arthritis and they also have like a urethral discharge? That's Neisseria gonorrhea, right? Okay, now what's the STI that can be treated with a macrolid or with doxycycline? That is chlamydia, right? That's chlamydia, like the D through K serovars. Remember, lymphogranuloma venereum is caused by the L1, 2, and 3 serovars of chlamydia. But the actual like UTI of how do I put this? So, you know what? Let me lay this thing to rest, right? So there are A through C serovars of chlamydia trachomatis. It causes like ocular infections. I think it's like the most common cause of blindness in like the developing world or something ridiculous. The D through K serovars tend to cause more, they can cause STIs. But if you're thinking about, and they tend to cause more of like the urethral discharge, penile discharge or whatever. But if you see like ulcers on the genitals, think about lymphogranuloma venereum, and those are your L1, 2, and 3 serovars. It's actually very high yield to know those different presentations for exams. Now, what is the STI that's treated really nicely with ceftriaxone? That's Neisseria gonorrhea, right? And if you're treating for Neisseria gonorrhea, you also have to concomitantly treat for, so you give like ceftriaxone and doxycycline or ceftriaxone azithromycin. You want to treat for concomitant and chlamydial infection at the same time. Okay, now there is something I want to say in terms of like rash patterns, something that helps people a ton on MBMEs, right? So what if you get a question about a patient that has like a rash on the palms, on the soles, and on the trunk, and they recently had a painless chancre? That's secondary syphilis, right? Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has like a sandpaper rash on the trunk, and then they maybe give you a clinical history of like a strawberry tongue? That's scarlet fever, right? With like group A strep, right? So like strep pyogenes. Now, what if you get a question about a rash that starts on the face and migrates caudally, right? Down towards the feet. That's measles, right? Also, don't forget your cough, coryza, and conjunctivitis, right? And they may also have those coplic spots on the buccal mucosa. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about a rash that starts on the palms and soles and migrates centrally? So like it goes from outward in. That's actually Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Remember, that's caused by Rickettsia rickettsii. Remember, you give doxycycline for that, right? Unfortunately, even if the kid is less than 7 years old, it doesn't matter. You go ahead and give doxycycline. If not, they will die for sure. If it's a pregnant woman that has Rickettsia rickettsii, you can give a chloramphenicol. But in general, right, like Lyme disease, if you're under the age of 7, you get amoxicillin on MBMEs. But if you're over the age of 7, you get doxycycline. But that rule does not apply to Rocky Mountain spotted fever. If you have Rickettsia rickettsii, all ages, you get doxycycline. If you're pregnant, you get chloramphenicol. End of story. Okay, now, what if you get a question about a patient that has a rash on the hand, on the palms and soles, and they also have like lesions in the mouth? Right, that's hand, foot, mouth disease, right? That's Coxsackie A virus. Remember, Coxsackie B virus is the one that causes myocarditis on MBMs. Now, what if they give you a question about a rash that's lasting for like 3 days? That's rubella, right? So don't confuse rubella with rubeola. Rubeola is measles. Rubella is German measles. I know, it's kind of annoying. So rubella is German measles. It classically causes like a rash that lasts for 3 days on MBMs. And really, like, a higher giveaway you may actually get on the exam is they may talk about like posterior auricular lymphadenopathy, okay? Because it also kind of like begins at the head and spreads downwards like rubella. So please don't mix up rubella and rubeola. Rubeola is measles. Rubella is German measles. I know, super annoying, but you got to know it for your test. Again, these rash patterns, they can help you tremendously on a USMLE exam. Okay. So let's keep cruising along. I'm feeling pretty good this evening. Let's see. So, how do I present this? You know what? Let's do some generalizations with pneumonia. They're not always true, but they are good generalizations. So what if you get a question about like a neonate? So like first 4 weeks of life, they have a pneumonia. Think about group B strep or like listeria, right? What if you get a question about a patient like in the 2 to 10 age range and they have like pneumonia, think more about like 2 to 4 age range. Think about RSV, like a viral pneumonia. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has pneumonia and it's like teenage years, early 40s? That's more mycoplasma, right? Like walking pneumonia. Now, what if you get a question about like an older patient, like in their 50s, 60s, and they have pneumonia? Think more strep pneumo, right? What if it's a HIV patient with like, like interstitial infiltrates? That's pneumocystis jervetii, but here's where you need to be careful. Your friends at the MBME, they know that everyone, HIV pneumonia, PCP, HIV pneumonia, PCP. Gotta be careful. If they tell you that there's a lobar consolidation on chest x-ray in a HIV patient, it is strep pneumo, not PCP. PCP causes interstitial infiltrates. PCP causes interstitial infiltrates. Strep pneumo causes lobar consolidations. So the most common cause of a lobar consolidation on imaging, on MBMEs in a HIV patient is strep pneumo, not PCP pneumonia. And again, I mean, the most common overall cause of pneumonia in every population is strep pneumo, right? Okay, so let's see, how do I present this? Okay. Again, just to rehash this, this is something that shows up all the time, right? Pneumonia in like some patient that has been on like chronic immunosuppressant or like chronic corticosteroid therapy or HIV patient is what, right? That's pneumocystis jervetii, right? Now, what is the most common cause of walking pneumonia, right? So like the patient will not have like a super high fever, they'll have interstitial infiltrates, they'll be on the younger end of the spectrum. That's mycoplasma, right? How about pneumonia in an alcoholic? And let's assume they have like a red currant jelly sputum. That's Klebsiella pneumonia, right? But what if they give you a question about a patient, you know, they're an alcoholic or they have like some, they were like obtunded and then they have like a pneumonia and they have like foul smelling sputum? You really want to think about an anaerobic pneumonia under those circumstances. Now, what if they give you a question about like pneumonia and you see like interstitial infiltrates? And let's assume it's like a pet store owner or like a bird handler. I really hope you're thinking about psittacosis, right? So like Chlamydia psittaci. Okay. Now, what if they give you a question about pneumonia in a patient that like lives in Kentucky or Ohio, or they travel to those areas and let's say like they were exposed to like birds, like bats, or they went into caves, right? Let's assume they went spelunking. What's the bug you're thinking about? That's Histoplasma capsulatum. Very good. Okay, so what if you get a question about a patient that has a pneumonia and they recently visited like, I don't know, like Southern California or like New Mexico or like Texas and they have erythema nodosum? That's a, like a painful lesion, like erythematous, well-circumscribed lower extremity. That's coccidiomycosis, right? That's coccidioides imidus. Okay. Now, what if you get about a pneumonia, right, with and they tell you that the patient has like a rust-colored sputum? That's strep pneumo, right? How about the red currant jelly sputum? That's Klebsiella pneumonia. Okay. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient that has pneumonia and they recently went for a business conference, or let's say they were exposed to like air conditioning, or let's say they have pneumonia. In fact, I think of this as pneumonia plus. They have like pneumonia and they have like hyponatremia. They may even have like thrombocytopenia. They may have like diarrhea. And this organism stains positive with, I believe, silver. That's Legionella pneumophila, right? Now, what if they give you a question about a patient that has pneumonia and they handle like cow poop, like cattle? Think about Coxiella bonnerii. Remember, Coxiella bonnerii causes a Q fever. It can also cause, what is this thing called? It can also cause, come on, divine, think. It can actually cause endocarditis. It's actually one of those things that causes culture negative endocarditis these days on MBMEs. Now, what if they give you a question about a patient that has cystic fibrosis and they're like 18 years old and they have a pneumonia? That's Staph aureus, right? So if you're less than 20, pneumonia, CF patient, a Staph aureus if you're greater than 20, think about a Pseudomonas. But if you see a question about pneumonia in a CF patient and they're greater than 20 and Pseudomonas is not an answer choice, go with this bug. It's known as a Bocoderia sepacea. Okay, go with Bocoderia sepacea. Okay, now, what are the three most common causes of atypical pneumonia? All right, it's mycoplasma, it's chlamydia, right, and then legionella as well. And remember, you cover all these bugs with macrolids, right? In fact, macrolids, right, has an M, a C, and an L in it. So that tells you the bugs that macrolids cover, right, like mycoplasma, chlamydia, and legionella. Remember your macrolids, right, like erythromycin. Is also like a motilane receptor agonist, right? So it can be used to treat a diabetic gastroparesis. And then your macrolides can also prolong the QT interval. And they inhibit the 50S ribosome. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about pneumonia in a neonate and they tell you that, oh, they take a sputum sample and you find like a gram-positive cocci. That's group B strep, right? Strep E galactiae. Now, what if you get a question about pneumonia in your neonate and they tell you that, oh, they get a sputum sample and you find gram-negative rods? That's E. coli, right? Okay. Now, what if you get a question about like a pneumonia and like expiratory wheezing in a nine-month-old? That's RSV, right? So RSV, I'm telling you this, I promise you this very high yield. RSV on MBMEs presents with expiratory wheezing, not inspiratory stridor. This is especially important for the pediatric shelf and for step 2 CK and step 3. If you see inspiratory stridor, think about croup, that's parainfluenza, or think about epiglottitis with like H flow, like strep pneumo or whatever. Okay? Those are the things that cause inspiratory stridor. Expiratory wheezing is RSV on a peds shelf exam. You can basically take that to the bank. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about pneumonia in like a wool sorter or like some kind of postal worker and this person has hemoptysis? That's bacillus anthracis, right? Remember, it can cause a hemorrhagic mediastinitis. So if they give you like a question about like an FBI worker or like a postal worker that has like a widened mediastinum on chest x-ray, you really want to think about bacillus anthracis under those circumstances. And remember that the capsule of bacillus anthracis is not made of like carbs, it's made of like protein, so like a polyglutamate. That's kind of high yield to know for the USMLEs. Now, what is the most common cause of pneumonia in a young adult? That's mycoplasma pneumonia, right? What's the most common cause of pneumonia overall? That is strep pneumo. Okay. What is the most common cause of viral pneumonia? That's RSV, right? Okay. And if they tell you that a person has pneumonia and they have like a lung abscess, I really want you to think about like MRSA, so like Staph aureus, so like an anaerobe or like Klebsiella pneumonia. Okay. How about pneumonia in an IV drug user? And let's say they tell you that you see septic emboli on imaging. The Staph aureus, right? Or if a patient has pneumonia, like let's say like they get like a worsening of their symptoms and they're just recovering from the flu, so like a post-viral pneumonia, think about Staph aureus, right? Think about Staph aureus. Staph aureus loves to form like cavitary pneumonias in post-viral pneumonia patients. Okay. And I mean, if you see like a pneumonia, you see like air fluid levels on chest x-ray, again, think about Staph aureus like MRSA, but also think about your anaerobes, right? And the classic anaerobes they put on the USMLEs, they can put like a Peptostreptococcus, they can put a Prevotella, they can put a Fusobacterium, they can put like a Bacteroides, right? So like B. fragilis. Okay. So let's see. Let's keep rolling. I'll probably be done with this soon. Let's see, how do I present this? How do I go to the next round? Let's see. Okay, let's go ahead and do it this way. So, what if you get a question about a patient that has watery diarrhea and he recently just returned from some kind of international trip? That's ETEC, right? That's enterotoxigenic E. coli. Now, what if you get a question about like watery diarrhea in like a developing country and the stools look like rice water? That's Vibrio cholerae, right? Now, what if you get a question about watery diarrhea in a hiker or a camper? Or a patient with IgE deficiency or Bertonzi gamma globulinemia? That's Giardia lamblia, right? How about a cruise-shaped watery diarrhea? That's norovirus or the Norwalk virus, right? How about watery diarrhea in an infant? That is rotavirus. Okay. How about watery diarrhea in an AIDS patient? That is Cryptosporidium parvum. Okay, remember the acid fast oocysts in the stool. And I believe you treat that with a nitazoxanide. Alternatively, if I'm remembering correctly, I think you can also give paromomycin, but I'm not 100% on that. I'm 100% on the nitazoxanide part. Paromomycin has been years. I review that stuff. Okay. What if you get a question about like bloody diarrhea after consuming beef? It could actually be one of like three options on an NBME. It could be Campylobacter, it could be EHEC, it could be Shigella. But if they are going after like Shigella or EHEC, they may give you other things, like things in the hemolytic uremic syndrome, right? So like a rising creatinine, a hemolytic anemia. So you may see like schistocytes on a blood smear. You may see like an indirect hyperbilirubinemia, stuff like that, and fevers, right? Now, how about like a bloody diarrhea after consuming like poultry or eggs? That's Salmonella, right? Salmonella enteritidis. Okay. What if a person has bloody diarrhea and they tell you that, oh, they perform some testing? Now, this will be a step one question. And you find a lactose fermenter. That's EHEC, right? Now, what's the most common cause of bloody diarrhea in the US? That's Campylobacter jejuni, right? And remember, right, if a patient has like bloody diarrhea and like subsequently they have like asymmetric ascending paralysis without like real sensory deficits, what are you thinking about? That's Guillain-Barré syndrome, right? That's Guillain-Barré syndrome. Okay, what if you get a question about, you know, patient that has diarrhea and they recently got treated for some kind of like anaerobic infection? Let's say they were in the hospital. Think about C. diff, right? Clostridium or difficile. Remember, anaerobic infections, you can treat them with clindamycin. And clindamycin is the thing that's like very commonly associated with C. diff. But you kind of want to not take that rule as hard and fast. Exposure to any antibiotic with diarrhea afterwards is C. diff essentially 100% of the time on an NBME exam. Okay, now, what if you get a question about like diarrhea that feels like appendicitis? So they may have like diarrhea and they have like significant pain in the right lower quadrant. And let's say they consume pork. That's Yersinia, right? Yersinia enterocolitica. Okay. Now what's like the high yield protozoal cause of bloody diarrhea on NBMEs? That's Entamoeba histolytica, right? Okay. What if you get a question about like bloody diarrhea and the bug, you just require like 10 or so bugs to cause significant symptoms? That's Shigella, right? Okay. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that has bloody diarrhea and they have like fever, they have like high body temperature, they have like low hemoglobin, they have like low platelets, they have like renal failure, or they may have like altered mental status? That's EHEC, right? Also like Shigella. So enterohemorrhagic E. coli. Or Shigella. Okay. How about like watery diarrhea after consuming like oysters or like seafood? That's what? Vibrio parahemolyticus. Very good. Okay. Now, how about like diarrhea after consuming like oysters and they tell you that, oh, they give you like labs and their ASD ALT is elevated and actually tends to have like, or let's put it this way. This kind of diarrhea tends to have a high mortality in patients with chronic liver disease. That's Vibrio vulnificus, okay? What if you get a question about a patient that has like watery diarrhea and they recently swam in like fresh water? Or they work in an aquarium? That's Aeromonas. It's this thing, I believe I have only ever seen it tested once on any USMLE that I've taken. Okay, now what if you get a question about a patient that has like diarrhea and they have like massive amounts of like fluid, loss, multiple electrolyte anomalies? That's Vibrio cholerae, right? Okay. Now, what if you get a question about a patient that went to like a Korean barbecue restaurant or like any kind of like Asian restaurant and they have a watery diarrhea and like a ton of vomiting? Especially like fried rice. Think of fried rice. That's Bacillus cereus, right? So be serious. Okay. I promise I'm not racist. It's just, that's how it's tested on exams. Okay. Now, what if you get a question about like diarrhea, like 2 hours after consuming a potato salad or food that was left out for long, right? That's Staph aureus, right? That's kind of easy. In fact, they tend to have less of diarrhea and more of like vomiting. Now, Don't forget that Clostridium perfringens can also cause diarrhea. I just thought I'll go ahead and throw that in there. That's something that actually shows up quite commonly on the USMLEs. And then just don't forget this thing about like a patient that sort of swims in fresh water and then they die afterwards. Think of this bug. Ugh, come on, Divine, think. I believe it's known as Naegleria fowleri. That shows up quite commonly on exam, so I'll keep that at the back of your mind if I were you. Okay, I'm going to try to keep this podcast under an hour. What if you get a question about like fever and like a new onset murmur in an IV drug user? That's Staph aureus, right? What if you get a question about like fever and a new murmur in a patient that just had a dental procedure? That would be strep viridans, okay? Now, what if you get a question about like fever and a new heart murmur in a patient with a prosthetic valve? That's Staph epidermidis, right? And then what if you get a murmur and they tell you that, oh, months earlier, weeks earlier, the patient had like a sore throat? That's strep pyogenes, right? That's like rheumatic fever. And actually, it's kind of high yield to know this. Patients that have endocarditis from like strep pyogenes, so like rheumatic fever, it tends to have a predilection for the left side of the heart, like the mitral valves. Okay, but if it's Staph aureus endocarditis, right, it has more of a predilection for the right side of the heart, right? Because think about it, if you're an IV drug user, literally analyze the word IV drug, IV intravenous, you're injecting into a vein. I don't know, where do veins drain? They drain to the right side of the heart, right? Like SVC and all that crap, right? So that's why you get like right-sided endocarditis. And rheumatic fever from strep pyogenes, right? You can actually prevent it by giving antibiotics. But remember, right, the classic MBME question, you cannot prevent glomerulonephritis from strep pyogenes. You cannot reduce the incidence by giving antibiotics. And then if they tell you about a patient that has like endocarditis and you find like sterile vegetations on both sides of the valve, right, that's pretty classic for Lippmann-Sachs endocarditis from SLE, right? So like systemic lupus erythematosus. So I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. I really hope you've gotten a lot from this podcast. Again, I can pretty much promise at least at a minimum, 15 questions correct on step 1, 2 CK, or step 3, just from this one podcast. So I would encourage you to just listen to it over and over again until you sort of have it down cold, okay? I guess I can call this the Clutch Micro Podcast, if you may. And as I do with every podcast I end, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams. So step 1, step 2 CK, step 3, step 2 CS, the medicine board exams, the internal medicine in training exam, the preclinical exam you take as a med student in your first 2 years of med school, the third year shelf exams. If you're a college student, like organic chemistry, general chemistry, physics, physiology, histology, biochem, I tutor all those things. And then if you're a med student applying for residency, so like an ERAS application, I do offer one-on-one like consulting for that. Or if you're a college student applying to med school, so an AMCAS application, I do offer like one-on-one consulting for that. I mean, I've been on the admissions committee for a top 2 med school for like a year. So I've sifted through like thousands of applications. And I can basically prepare you really well to put your best foot forward at an interview, both with like your personal statements, your application, your interview prep, all that stuff. I can help with all those things. I mean, pretty much everyone I worked with this last cycle matched to like their top 2 or 3 choices. Most people matched at their first choice. So take that for what you will. So I wish you all the very best. I do hope you get something out of this podcast. This is episode 100. I'm kind of excited to start episode 101, but let's see how my ICU schedule goes. So have a wonderful rest of your weekend, and I'll see you in the next podcast. God bless you. Thanks.